Whether it's touching down in some of the world's most fascinating destinations or wandering the halls of the very best art galleries and exhibition spaces, the printed page transports us to locations we might otherwise never imagine. But evoking a sense of place is a complex art, and only those with the most original ideas succeed. We'll talk to some of our favorite creative editors today on The Stack. Coming up in the program, we'll take a tour of some of the world's best art destinations, courtesy of Elephant Magazine.
I mean, this is one of the most beautiful new things I've seen in a long time. It's a real surprise. I didn't know the magazine until a few hours ago when one of our buyers actually handed it to me as well.
Plus, how did an idea for sharing holiday photos amongst a group of friends spawn what might be Malaysia's most beautiful travel magazine?
I'm a microbiologist, and my team are actually a marine biologist and a biotechnologist, so we are all in science background. So it's a little bit tough for us to actually learn about this thing.
Keep your arms and legs inside the cabin. We're about to take off. Today on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Berlay. Now, leaping ahead of an increasingly crowded selection of art-focused magazines on today's newsstand, Elephant first took to the shelves in 2009 and almost immediately made an impression. Publishing quarterly in April, July, October, and January, the magazine brings together some of the most influential voices working in today's art scene and takes readers on a tour inside artistic spaces all over the world. Now, this is a gentleman. He's been on our show once or twice, has a few views about many things. Mark Valley is Elephant's editor-in-chief, and he joins us here in studio today. Of course, many of our listeners will also know that he's one of course, many people, but one of the principals, of course, behind Magma here in London, a fantastic outlet that anyone who loves print spends hopefully a good amount of time also deploying a few pounds, I would say, in the space as well. And just as we're going on air, and of course, welcome, you've also sort of returned back to your stomping grounds. Well, you've got a bit of a full-time gig at Lawrence King Publishers as well now.
Yes, that's correct. I used to work for them about 16 years ago before actually Magma started. And I've always been involved in what they were doing, commissioning books, writing books, doing their gift list, which Magma started doing about 8 years ago, and that's been quite successful. You see, as books become harder to sell in bookshops, the gift side of bookshops have become very important. So I think we've been quite, say, pioneering in starting gifts that are related to publishing.
I want to come back to certainly what's happening at Lawrence King at the moment. But just before that, though, I'm always keen to talk about retail because it's an area that we're very involved with. And certainly you and I over the years have been talking about the evolution of what you've been doing with Magma. I think the constant reinvention, how people have to look at display, I think it was always very interesting, you know, you just talking about, you know, where do you position magazines, etc. But just as the clock was counting down at the top of the program, you said it's interesting to look at sort of this the stability of the business. And I feel it is a story, and of course, you know, maybe we wanted to, you know, slightly, you know, be at the vanguard of this as well. But, you know, we've been talking about the settle down. We talk about the settle down a lot, but it really seems to be coming good for lots of people. And have you seen a bit of a stabilization in some ways as well?
Yes, I do think there is something like that. And when you look at the people who have survived, whether it's us, whether it's artwords, whether it's foils, they somehow found a momentum and a stability and a way of operating that allows them to survive in the current environment with the high street rents the way they are. So I think there is, it's actually quite good news for us who produce magazines, books, etc.
Sure. And also, I guess in some ways, it's the forces of the market, it seems to me as well, that we've been living in a digital space long enough and people have, you know, are able to make an informed decision now. What do I prefer? And I'm going to, of course, maybe prefer a digital device for some things. But, you know, I have firmly decided that, you know, whether it's for holiday time or it's for my commute or it's on the sofa on a Sunday afternoon, I'm a paper person versus being a backlit screen person.
Yes, and I think also, I mean, what actually started to, the first thing that actually hit the book industry was the discounting, the incredible craze of discounting things. And Amazon obviously only made that worse. Whereas I think now customers have basically calmed down a little bit. They think, okay, a book is $9.99. I may buy it, say, for a pound less on Amazon, but do I really want to do that? Do I really want to bother? And I think Amazon customers now shop at Amazon if you don't have the time to go to a bookshop. But I think people have realized that it's actually nice to go down to a bookshop and be able to browse, and that that experience just cannot in any way be replicated online.
No. And it's amazing, I think, also, the surprises that we see sort of thrown to the marketplace. You know, on one side, you look at a big player like an Amazon, and who would have known that we would have ended last week with Amazon saying that, you know, they're going to go and buy what, upwards of, you know, two dozen 767s to move into the logistics business themselves. Maybe that's not such a surprise, but, you know, it was interesting, obviously, to see many months ago them moving into sort of bricks and mortar territory as they've done. But I think sort of, you know, likewise, I think if you look at other sides of the market too, maybe in your case, going back to what's happening with this crazy coloring boom amongst adults, which is like, you know, and this is, again, I mean, just people in the wood industry must be thrilled, because I was in Bavaria earlier in the week talking about Faber-Castell as, you know, as a big player and purveyor of colored pencils. You know, if you're growing forests up in northern Germany or Finland, it's great because you've got pencils to produce, you've got, and all of the acres and acres of paper that are going to be colored in.
Yeah, back in Brazil, where I'm from, last year they had run out of pens in the country at some point. It's just insane. And nobody saw this trend coming. One of our commissioning editors called Jo, she was one day looking at a copy of Creative Review and saw something in the, I think in the back cover. She thought, oh, very nice drawing. I'll ask this lady if she wants to do maybe a coloring book. And it took a bit of convincing, because she just wanted to do an illustration book. But like, try and do it as a color in, maybe. That can sell. And it took a year until it started to sell well. The first year was reasonable.
Right.
But nothing so exceptional. And now, well, we published two books with the same author called Joanna Batsford, and they have sold 14 million copies worldwide and counting. It just hit people out of the blue. And
well, what I'm
intrigued. Unfortunately,
so what happens now around, you know, around the boardroom table, Mark? Because, you know, you have a hit like this, which is, I mean, really in many ways unprecedented at this time. Yep. No analyst. I mean, you couldn't work with anybody who would have predicted this, right?
Impossible. Completely impossible. And I think in the world of art publishing, that is unprecedented.
Right.
Nothing like that ever happened. And, well, what happens in the boardroom, I suppose, is that people look around and think, question number one, how many coloring books do we keep printing? Because at some point this market is going to start declining.
Sure.
And we don't want to have millions of books in the warehouse. How much coloring in do we commission?
Mm-hmm.
How do we make this more interesting, more innovative? But also, how do we apply those funds, that investment, into new areas, which I suppose is also why I have joined the company.
Mm.
And so we're developing a very strong art list that includes also not just contemporary art, but also photography, film, lifestyle books. And the gift list that we started quite successfully with Magma about 8 years ago, and that's also a strong area, actually.
Mm.
It's never reached the millions of copies.
No.
But it had a few successes.
But, you know, when you go back to, let's say, you know, this coloring sort of, you know, craze and phenomena, it also sort of presents a challenge as well. As much as, okay, looking at what are the potential risks, not wanting to sit on too much stock, but I can imagine also the question as well, you know, what do you do for an encore?
Yeah, no, that is very hard to follow up on that, actually. But to be honest, there is a certain feeling in the company that, thank God, can we actually find a balance? Because that maybe was a little bit too crazy.
Sure.
And there were moments where the book that we did, they're called Secret Garden and Enchanted Forest, they're done on a very special, beautiful paper. Well, there's just a certain amount of stock of that paper in the world. And at one point, half the company was just busy trying to find people who could produce that paper to print enough copies.
You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. My guest today, Mark Valley, of course, Elephant Fame. And we're talking about, obviously, all of the work you're doing at Lawrence King and, of course, Magma as well. We'll go to a short break in a moment, but you have a little bit of late-breaking news about Elephant. Now, this is a title which, of course, many people are very familiar with, and you occupy a very particular patch, I would say, within the arts space. So for those who maybe have not been with our program for the past few years, what part of the newsstand would you say you operate in when you're going out and pitching the title? And we'll come back to maybe where what your news is in a moment.
I mean, we're obviously a contemporary art magazine, so it's about art, but art is a very big, very broad market.
And you've got plenty of competitors in that space.
We have very strong competitors. Obviously, the two leading magazines in that market are Frieze and Art Forum. However, The great thing about those magazines is that they have become institutions. Mm. Every gallery in the world needs to have their ad there, and people measure their success by how close to page one they are in terms of the positioning of their ads. So everybody would check who is advertising in Art Forum or in Frieze and where they are placed, etc., etc. The problem with those magazines is precisely that they are institutions. Mm. When you have something that works so well, you don't necessarily want to change its formula. I suppose this is where Elephant comes in. I think those magazines are very much writing towards the art market, whereas Elephant is writing towards the art lover.
Right.
Whether you're an artist yourself or whether you're a collector, you're not necessarily somebody who's there to know what the latest piece of jargon is that you should be using at your next art dinner. It's more about the pleasure of enjoying art, basically.
Mm. Elephant is part of the Frame Group, Dutch publishing entity, obviously famous for what they do on the periodical side, but also their book publishing and book spin-offs as well. So it looks like there's a move to independence, potentially?
That's correct, yes. I think both Frame and us at Elephant recognized that because all of the editorial team was based in London, and all of the business development side of the business was at Frame in Holland, that it just wasn't possible. Magazines are things that need to move very quickly. So even though we could produce a very nice magazine, and in order to develop the business side of things needed to be tied in with the editorials, so that if we did an issue on Paris, for example, that we could go to Paris and do business in Paris and do special things in Paris and events, and that just wasn't working.
Right.
And after many years and many Skype meetings, we decided, well, maybe we need a different solution. And I think both sides are actually happy to do that.
Mm.
And we've reached the deal, and it's quite exciting. So from mid-April onwards, we should be an Elephant Publishing as an independent company.
Well, congratulations in advance. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. We're going to go away for a very short break. When we come back, we'll be heading off to Malaysia. Stay with us.
Travel in comfort with the help of the Monocle Shop. It's the place to select the best bags, passport wallets, travel guides, and, of course, the latest issue of the magazine to entertain you on your lounger. We have a great lineup of special collaboration bags with Porter in Japan, including the new Overnighter bag, ideal for a city weekend trip. And then there's the limited edition Remova multi-wheel, made from lightweight polycarbonate in a special Monocle edition. Visit our stores in London, New York, Toronto, Singapore, Tokyo, and Hong Kong, or shop online at monocle.com. Be the one turning heads at the luggage carousel.
You're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24. My guest today is Mark Valley from, of course, Elephant Magazine and also of Magma. And as we heard, a little bit of Lawrence King fame, certainly in the space of flogging a lot of coloring books aimed at the adult audience. But time now to head to Malaysia to talk about a new travel title called Muso Trees, edited by Carol Iswan. The Kuala Lumpur title was founded by four friends and initiated when they were sharing their holiday pictures. And as everything looks better in print, they decided to share some of their travel stories in a magazine format. The second issue is just being published and stocked in some of the best newsstands around the world. Muso Trees counts its contributors from its places as far flung as Oslo to Morges in Switzerland. Our Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Carol about the concept of the magazine and more about the magazine industry in Malaysia.
To start off, Muso Trees magazine is actually about travel magazine, and the idea started off about 2 years ago, but my team and I really work on it about a year ago. And then I have another three friends who are actually sharing the same passion about traveling. So we have published our first volume last May in 2015, and the second volume has released about 2 weeks ago. The thing is, I am an avid traveler. I travel a lot, and I thought that I need to have something more physical to share my stories and my photos with people, because I often share my pictures on Instagram and all those social platforms. So I need something more permanent. So, and being myself, I really love magazine, like independent magazine, like Monocle, of course. And I had like Kinfolk and Serial, and I said to myself, why not to produce my own? And then the idea blooming, and then we just work our, you know, to do this thing. And yeah, Muso Trees born.
And of course, Carol, you're based in Kuala Lumpur as well. I want to ask you, I mean, how is it to make a magazine in Malaysia in general? I think our listeners would be quite interested to know a little bit more about the magazine market there. Was it a bit of a struggle, or is it a kind of a booming market?
Well, in the first place, we don't have much independent magazine in Malaysia. We do have, but not that enough. So it's a little bit struggle at the beginning because we don't know how to navigate this thing. And to add on that, I have no background in publication whatsoever because I'm a microbiologist and my team are actually a marine biologist and a biotechnologist. So we are all in science background. So it's a little bit tough for us to actually learn about this thing, but we always seek for guidance and help with another like international independent magazine as well, like editor from this magazine. Magazine, like off-screen magazine, so we learn from that. So basically it's a baby steps for all of us, but in terms of this independent scene in Malaysia, we don't have that much, so we always look out for international independent magazines. So yeah, it's a little bit struggle at first, but I think we're doing okay, still learning, but we're doing fine.
I would like to ask you as well a question about the business of making musu trees as well. I mean, how do you do, for example, the distribution? I know you have several stockists around the world, but I mean, are you planning to increase on that, for example?
Well, when we think about the marketing or the business perspective, of course, we want to have a huge distribution, right? But then as for now, because we have a very small circulation and we don't have distributor anywhere. So basically, I'm working on my own to actually contact those stockists to have my magazine at their shop, which it is a little bit, you know, more job than I should do. But then, of course, in the future, we would love to have a large distribution and to have a distributor to have the magazine distributed all over the places.
Before we talk about some of the stories that caught my eye in the new issue, I want to ask you also about advertising. It's interesting because, you know, for example, I can see the brand, the swim shorts brand, O'Lannon. You did a collaboration with them. That's quite a nice two-page piece about Dan here on your magazine. So how do you want to do advertising in Musu Trees?
Well, I know about the reality in publication that in order for us to sustain in the publication industry, we need to have a brand or to be integrated in whatever magazine it is. So that is why we started off doing it in our Musu Trees Volume 2, because we don't have any advertorial or brand in Musu Trees Volume 1. So what did we do in Musu Trees Volume 2? We try to engage with those brands that has relation with traveling, because we do not want to run away from that ethos. We need to have that objective, like travel brands, to be integrated. So we would love to have more brand, of course, but we very, very selective and we try to curate each one of the brand that will be, you know, cooperating in the magazine. And we try to make sure that the brand has their own story to be told to people so that people would be interested to know more about them. To be honest, Monocle has inspired our team to actually, you know, learn about how to do this advertorial thing in the right way, in our case, to have their story to actually to be told.
Thank you very much. And actually, I want to buy one of those swim shorts anyway. But moving on, I want to talk about some of the stories in the new issue as well. A beautiful story called The Coffee Story as well. I believe it's one of the first stories in the magazine. I mean, beautiful pictures, a stunning, stunning story as well. I mean, can you tell us a bit more about this one?
Okay, The Coffee Story, well, I met the photographer when I was in Switzerland and we have this like small talk about how about we working together, because he told me about the story when we was in Kenya to work in Kenya for a while, and he has this time to go to the coffee plantation and to talk about how the coffee being processed and whatnot. And it occurred to me that it could be a great story because Musu Trees Volume 2 theme is the inexperienced issue. It means that we are trying to focusing on the place that is less traveled and probably like someone's hometown and not like a big city or big country. So and the contributor named Rafael really interested to actually, you know, go on board with it, and he just like, yeah, let's do it, and he talked about coffee, and we all know that everyone loves coffee, but sadly not everyone knows how it is being processed and where it is actually being planted. So I'm glad that we have that story to be in Musu Trees.
And that was Carol Iswan talking to our very own Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Carol Iswan is, of course, the editor of Muso Trees. And I'm happy to say, just by real curious coincidence, that our guest, Mark Valle, you brought in Muso Trees. What, you just picked it up on the stand just on your way into studio.
I actually stopped by Magma to, in a panic, saying
I need some new things.
I need some new things. And the buyer said, actually, there's this great magazine here. And that was Muso Trees, yeah.
What catches your eye? Because we talk about, you know, a crowded market all the time, and we can say that, you know, the art market is crowded. But I do feel, I was up in Papercut in Stockholm last week, and there are so many magazines now with a white border with a singular image, which are travelogue, someone's Instagram feed come to life, or someone maybe moving beyond Instagram. So there are a lot of them. But how does this magazine, or does this magazine, manage to sort of pull away from the pack, do you think?
I don't think I looked at it enough and gave it enough attention to really do it justice. I mean, I don't know that we can actually talk about a crowded market, because you couldn't talk about a crowded scene. And I think magazines are not a market, they are a scene. And the more people there are in a scene, the better it is for all of them.
Right.
And I think the more magazines there are out there, the better it is, you know.
And I'm all for that. I always just worry about people's bank balances, and do enough of them have, and it, you know, it's interesting, obviously, listening to Mr. Iswan's talk about, of course, you know, that they do want to commercialize, and you know, they do to do things. And I sometimes think, you know, unless you've either got an enormous trust fund, so many of these magazines, they don't want to be polluted by advertising and things like that. But you have to pick your commercial battle somewhere.
Yes, it is very, I mean, it is a mystery to me how everybody actually manages to make money out of it. But it's a little bit, I was thinking, you know, that Mark saying about everything that's solid turns into thin air. And it's almost like these days, everything that's thin air turns into paper,
yeah,
isn't it? Everybody who has a passion wants to actually print that passion onto nice, creamy paper with enough white space around it.
Should we stay in, largely in the Southeast Asia region? Because you've brought a title in from the Philippines. And again, I think just in the way that we haven't seen a lot of independently produced titles, you know, certainly out of Malaysia, we've seen enough things that are coming out of Singapore and Thailand, maybe. But you brought an interesting one in from the streets of Manila, I think.
Yes, it's called Purveyor, as in YR at the end. And it's a really odd magazine. It has an impact in terms of its design and its imagery. It feels a bit street. It's like a street art magazine meets, say, the Smith Journal or something.
Right.
And they do a very odd thing, which is, say, they'll show the work. There's a street artist and a painter and an illustrator who are all interviewed, and they will show in detail how that person works and pictures of that artist without actually showing the art, which I must say is really interesting.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's at first I was thinking, is this completely crazy and absurd? But no, it kind of works very well. And there is a feature on underground hip-hop, and it alternates with a feature on coffee. Obviously, if you do a magazine these days, you need
to
talk about coffee about at it, some point.
Or even have your own cafes.
Exactly.
I would love to see someone actually do a story sort of, you know, I think, tracking also the rise of economies and sort of growing affluence. Also, how is that in lockstep? I mean, it could almost be something that the Economist Intelligence Unit could do it, or we could do it maybe, looking at, you know, what happens with independent publishing. And I think also then, you know, GDP growth in a country, because it's just, it seems they're almost in lockstep in many ways. And that seeing something like this come out of the Philippines is quite interesting. And I think, I mean, just looking through it as well, at sort of first flip and first glance, yeah, it feels, as you said, a little bit street. You think, okay, are we, you know, we've got a bit of graffiti. Are we going to go into skateboard territory and tattoo land? But it seems to, yeah, I think it takes a few other diversions, which is nice. Yeah. Should we work our way westbound, maybe stop in Warsaw, because you've brought in a title which I like. We haven't spent, we've spent some time on it from time to time on the program. And this is Paper magazine, which is out of Warsaw. Who would have thought, and I don't mean this in a negative sense, but it really sort of just changes, I think, perceptions about what's going on in Poland from a visual identity perspective, but I think also from a pop culture perspective, design, everything, when you look at it.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the most beautiful new things I've seen in a long time. It's a real surprise. I didn't know the magazine until a few hours ago when one of our buyers actually handed it to me as well. And from the binding, amazing. I mean, it's just basically amazingly well curated. The images are stunning. whether it's the photography or the illustrations, the design is just perfect. I haven't read it, I must confess, but it feels really beautiful, actually.
And it's in part sort of not surprising that a title like This Is Paper, you know, does come out of Poland, because we were surrounded by so many, of course, you know, glosses and titles from big publishers, and so many titles are printing in Poland now. I mean, there is a cost advantage. There are, of course, even some big paper players, you know, Munk and Arctic Paper, which I think so many of these titles actually use. I think they're in Poznan or not Gdansk. So it's just interesting that there is this already this fantastic print foundation that exists in Poland anyway. But I think fantastic issue. If you haven't picked it up, John Tebbs, Peter Opswick, Rosen Bosch. There's a piece on Tilco Furniture, a really and a great little story at the back, which is five pillars of well-being at work and everyday life. It's Papa Sasha's simple tips. And it just sort of takes you through these five basic things, but from seating to workspace to the need for outdoors and beautifully done. We've probably got time for just one last title before we go.
Do you know Cercle?
I don't know Cercle.
No, Cercle is, I think, from Strasbourg. It's a French publication. They're on their issue 3. Issue 1, it's basically an art magazine? It's a visual art magazine. So it has illustration, it has photography, it has contemporary art, and it's very visual. And with every issue, they do a themed issue. And the whole issue is about that theme. Now, issue 1 was about forests, which you'd say, okay, it's an okay theme. Issue 2 was about space. You'd say, okay, that's fine. Now, issue 3, which is the one we have here, is about insects, which, I mean, imagine doing a whole issue of a magazine, and it's not a thin one, just on insects. And you'd think, well, at first I didn't want to take it home. And then I thought, actually, I'll take it home with me and I have a look at it. And it was just stunning. It's really, really good. There's, for example, this amazing Japanese illustrator called Ryo Takemasa, who's done insects, animators who worked with insects, people who collect insects, photographers who work with insects. It's just great.
Mm.
And I mean, I'm not a fan of insects, but I was really gripped by that.
It's interesting. It's partly out of Strasbourg and partly out of Hong Kong through IDN. But just, I mean, really, the production values and... if anything, I mean, an incredible benchmark, I think, just from a print quality perspective as well.
Yeah,
beautifully
yeah.
done. Mark, always very good to see you. Thanks for coming
Thank you.
Good luck also with closing the deal. It's never quite as easy as your lawyers tell you it's going to be. That's all for this edition of The Stack, our program as ever produced by Ben Rylan and Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Also, our editor is Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, then drop us a note at info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back at the same time next Saturday. And of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or iTunes. This program is also going to be coming somewhat live with a very specific format as well. April 15th, 16th, and 17th, we're going to be in Vienna for a quality of life conference. So if you happen to be in the area or have direct access to flying into Vienna Airport, then of course you can find out more about our conference on monocle.com. You've been listening to The Stack here on a Saturday on Monocle 24. I'm Tyler Brulé. Have a very good weekend. Goodbye.